You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where we want more than just a little bit of R-E-S-P-E-C-T. I'm your host, Justin Mozneski, and hopefully I didn't butcher that too badly. It'd be ironic to make the respect reference and be disrespectful. Then again, I am white, honoring a black woman, Aretha Franklin, so who knows these days. Joining me this trip from our nation's capital, Daniel T. Richards.
Well, you offend me on a weekly basis, and I'm half Mexican. You've never given two S's about it, jerk.
Well, speaking of that, and maybe you were setting me up here, but did you see the comic I texted you that I found on Twitter?
Yeah, about the kid standing up in class saying he was half Mexican or something.
Yeah, and then somebody, the social justice warrior, replied to him, "You're not half Mexican. You're full Mexican and full white and 100% American." And I was like, look, it's a comic about Daniel.
That kid had too much hair to be me. But yeah, I saw it. I don't get it. I don't get their point. I don't understand anything. When I say I'm half Mexican, I'm talking about genetically speaking, which is a thing, right? That is a thing. I'm not making that up. Insider Morgan, you can message us if I'm getting the science wrong here. Point being, my father's Mexican. My mother is not Mexican, thus half Mexican.
But they're saying you're being disrespectful to yourself by saying you can be half a heritage. Haven't we seen by now with the whole trans movement that genetics don't matter anymore? It doesn't matter what your chromosomes say. It doesn't matter what your DNA says. What matters is what you feel, Daniel.
Oh, well, I feel like a Roman emperor and should be treated as such.
I thought you were going to say I feel like a natural woman.
Quiet. We haven't introduced you yet. You don't exist.
Ironically, he's saying that. Joining us from Dale's Ron Lawn.
Dale's Ron? Is your girlfriend getting to
you? I know. The Asian accent's rubbing off a little bit.
From Dale's Lawn, and he might feel like a natural woman because he identifies as one, to forego his gay white male privilege, William Green.
Hello, hello. Good to be back. I got my hair freshly cut for this episode this morning, so I'm sure you all can bask in my beauty through with audio, of course.
I can hear the sharpness of those hairs. Yeah.
I thought you were directly addressing the NSA.
Is that why the green light keeps coming on my camera?
Yeah, that's why.
Oh, man.
All right. So when I'm talking about, you know, it's about your feelings and it's not about the genetics, that's actually really relevant, I think, to the first story. So we'll continue this discussion in the news with Daniel T. Richards.
Well, I assure you, Mr. Listener, it really is that bad. Isn't just a fad.
The line between smartphone fantasy and reality is blurring, at least according to Vox.com, in an article called Snapchat Dysmorphia: Why People Are Getting Plastic Surgery to Look Like Edited Photos. The article begins by profiling a few different people, all pseudonyms. Grace Smith, for instance, started using the Facetune photo app a few years back to edit wrinkles out of her face. The lines between her eyebrows created a shadowy effect on her forehead, and she thought she looked fresher and prettier in pictures when the shadow was erased. Pretty soon, the touched-up photos made the Washington, D.C. health coach long to edit her wrinkles out in real life. If, this is a quote from her, "If I already have an indent in my forehead now, how bad is it going to be when I'm 60? At age 23, Smith turned to Botox, a local injection that causes facial wrinkles to smooth out, for a real-life fix. 5 years later, she's getting injections into her forehead every 9 months. She's also had her lips filled and skin lasered because it didn't look pretty on camera. Dermatologist Noelle Sherber says that she has a lot of millennials as part of her practice, and most of the time they want to talk about how they appear in their edited photos, and they are looking to explore options of how to translate that into reality. This is something dermatologists and plastic surgeons around the country are seeing, and they're now using the term Snapchat dysmorphia to describe this quote-unquote beauty trend, as more and more millennials are going in and wanting bigger eyes and plumper lips and trying to reduce the size of their nose to compensate for the fact that the camera makes your nose look bigger in selfies. Justin, are you going to go in and get like deer ears implanted on the side of your head and like have permanent like little birdies flying around your head? That's one of the Snapchat filters, right?
I'm still trying to figure out how to look like the Flash filter from when Justice League came out. I was using that one all the time. I mean, how do I become a superhero, Daniel?
Well, you go in and you have people carve up your face, and thus, by the law of transgenderism, you are a superhero.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that that law applied to also becoming a superhero. That's good to know. Yeah. Also good to know is why I look terrible in selfies. I've always hated my nose. I've always thought it was pointy in the same way Eminem like has some lines about his nose looking pointy. And now that I know that, that explains why I hate selfies. So I appreciated that. I also want to say before I launch into my analysis slash rant, it's good that Vice finally got one right, guys.
Nope. Incorrect.
No?
Wrong.
Incorrect.
Not Vice.
Damn it. Vox. I didn't find this article or anything. I thought it was Vox. All this time I was happy this week to say that, but no, Vox finally got one right too, right?
Vox gets about 1 in 50 right. Vice gets about 1 in none right. So...
yeah.
Okay. I thought you were
Vice is the experts at leaving particular facts out that completely change the story. Like blatantly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Vox okay, at least has some interesting journalism. It's just the vast minority. Over to you.
Yeah. Sorry.
We're all waiting for your rant. Yeah.
Sorry. I lost my train of thought. So I don't know about you guys, but I have always hated filters. For this exact reason. And then it escalated to this photo editing crap where we do not live in reality. We live in a world where it's all about literally perception. You know how growing up they used to say perception is reality? Hmm. Perception isn't reality, but people have internalized that phrase so much that that's all that matters now. Filters are literally used mainly by girls to cover up and look away that's different than the way they look because they're insecure about how they look. And rather than come to terms with how they look, they do that. And now they're actually taking it a step further where they're getting plastic surgery. I can think of almost nothing besides Antifa violence that's a more horrific sign of our times. This is disturbing to me. Look, I understand, like, I just made the joke about the Flash filter. Filters can be used in a fun way. They can be a fun thing. And I'm not blaming the filters themselves, but it's the same thing with social media. You blame the user of the tool for how the tool is being used. And look how it's being used. People post, I would go on online dating when I was single, and I would reject girls or swipe left or whatever you want to say, because all their pictures were them with filters on. How am I going to know what you really look like?
Yeah, it was actually Hillary Clinton in every photo. So.
Is it how does Justin though? How does filters compare to makeup then? What's the primary difference you see there?
To me, there's a line as far as how much makeup you're using as well. I actually, this new trend of like makeup artists who overly cake their face in makeup. And it changes the way their face fundamentally looks. So when they wash it away, they look a completely different person. I don't like it. If you've also noticed that those women are all, they also, those makeup artists, quote unquote, tend to be very heavy, to be polite. To me, the line is accentuating versus changing versus covering up.
It's something about faking reality, isn't it?
Right.
It's not fucking plastic surgery. It's makeup. You can't change the structure.
Okay. So Christine knows that we can't hear her, right? And so when she chimes in, it's just dead silence on the podcast, which is
that makes for great pod
for an audio medium. Just so she knows, we could relay that.
Hey, I was just listening to you guys. I was not saying anything, so.
Okay. So, to continue with the audio podcast, okay. This is from a JAMA article on facial plastic surgery. JAMA is a medical journal. Quote, it can be argued that these apps, like Facetune and Snapchat, are making us lose touch with reality because we expect to look perfectly primped and filtered in real life as well. Now it's not just celebrities propagating beauty standards, it is a classmate, a coworker, or a friend. The pervasiveness of these filtered images can take a toll on one's self-esteem, make one feel inadequate for not looking a certain way in the real world, and may even act as a trigger and lead to body dysmorphic disorder. So, William, we should clearly then ban filters, right?
I'm wondering, though, when this will affect the dick pic. And for once, I'm not talking about dumb internet comments. You know, the embiggen filter, the widen filter, all those filters are going to make men want to have plastic surgery on their dick, right?
I mean, I don't know, but I just the fact that you've said that makes me think it hasn't. I mean, there has to be guys who already use that stuff on dick pics. There has to be.
There has to be. I think it's interesting, you know, like this is. I'm probably one of the few people, might be the only one on this podcast, that's actually had plastic surgery, and it was due to a car crash, head trauma. And it's a terrible thing, right? Like, it's very painful, there's long recovery, all this stuff. And to be so messed up that you want to do things to your face like that, it just cries out for some sort of psychological help to me. I mean... there are certainly things, if I could wave a magic wand and it would be painless, like there are things that I would change about myself that way. But you know, there's a certain pride in working on your body as a whole and accepting the reality of what your body can do and pushing those limits. But I don't think that applies when you're talking about plastic surgery like this. I don't know. It makes me very uncomfortable to think that someone will look at a Snapchat filter, which is, I could see as a, it can be used in a positive way. It's like a selective recreation, a caricature almost of you. You can make it into something like that, which would be kind of cool. But then to think, oh, this is how I want to look like in real life. I don't understand how it's any different than that chick that wanted to look like a Barbie so much she had like 300 plastic surgeries or something.
It's not different. It's exactly the same thing.
Yeah, William, I went environmentally friendly and had paper surgery. So I just want you to know that I'm...
Oh, wow.
It was biodegradable plastic surgery. How dare you?
That was a good dad joke, though. That was a good one.
Thank you.
I like that one.
So this is certainly something that relates, and here we get into extreme controversy, relates to the transgender movement in a certain sense, right? Which is that there are... Just like with the transgender movement, there are certain scenarios in which surgery makes total sense and is rational, but those situations are exceedingly rare compared to what we talk about in modern culture now. And in most cases, it would be better if people got therapy to accept themselves as they are instead of wanting to alter themselves, and instead of having plastic surgeons literally cut these people's faces open to help them conform to this fake filtered quote-unquote reality. Instead of seeing a plastic surgeon, how about you see a therapist? That would be my suggestion. And you know that that's not pointed just at people with body dysmorphic disorder, because I suggest we all see therapists. I'm universal in that account. So
certainly, and I certainly agree with what you're saying, Daniel. And the line for me is when you're trying to live up to something that's faking reality. Because let's do a Black Mirror hypothetical here. Where let's say plastic surgery is really easy 20 years from now. I still think there's a line of, even if it's easy, you shouldn't change yourself if you're only doing it to live up to an unrealistic standard. And it's something William said earlier, it's the disconnect from reality. Because look, for any of us, man or woman, we could go online and we can look at the pictures these people are taking. Or, let's be more simplistic here. look at Hollywood, right? Let's look at action stars. Let's look at Henry Cavill or anyone who's been in any of these action movies. They literally are paid to spend 6 months to train and then to star in these movies and to look good during these movies. We reviewed Baywatch last week. The way Zac Efron looked in that movie, he had to have had like 4% body fat. And it, even if you're a guy and you're comparing yourself to that, you can't live up to that on a daily basis. You have a different lifestyle. And if you use that as your metric, you're going to be psychologically unhealthy. So even if things are available and easy, there's still a line where you have to be connected with reality. And that's what I mean where I'm saying we're not living in reality anymore. We're living through, literally, we're living through filters. The Snapchat filter is a metaphor, is a concrete thing, but now it's become a metaphor where because of social justice and because of relativism, we're living life disconnected from reality.
Yeah, and I also think it's a bit of not understanding the line between things you have power over and can change and things that you really can't change. Like, you cannot make your eyes bigger, right? Like, that's just not going to happen, right? You can have plastic surgery, but you will always distort your face when you do that, right? Like, my face is not the same. I mean, it's as close as it could be, right, to before my car accident, but, like, it's, I look at it and I know that it's different. You know, I looked at my face for 27 years beforehand, right? And it's never going to be that way. It's always going to be slightly off and slightly distorted, no matter what. So you're giving up something you could change, right? There's tons of other things you could improve in your life. And instead, for some psychological reason, which again, like, I'm not a psychologist, so I don't fully understand, but you've sort of fixated on something that requires all of this, like, rewriting of reality around an irrational desire that is just tragic.
Yeah, as a famous philosopher once said, you can filter reality, but you can't avoid the consequences of filtering reality.
So. Man, you're just turning all the phrases today, Daniel.
That's why I get paid the big bucks on this show. So,
William, I think part of it has to do with sort of getting used to things. And what I'm talking about is, like, specifically for myself, like, you know, going through and putting on the muscle I put on and gaining the weight. Now that I'm used to how I look, like, right after it happened, I was like, oh yeah, I look bigger. But now that I'm used to how I look, and also, you know, there's all the comparison pictures out there and everything, like I was referring to Zac Efron and Baywatch, and then you look at anyone's Instagram, any of the fitness Instagrams out there, now that I'm used to it, I don't feel like the difference is as big as I thought it was. Mm-hmm. So even your own self-perception, you don't even perceive yourself correctly. That's where dysmorphia comes from. That's where body dysmorphia comes from. And then the point is, we're adding in these other elements that make this false self-perception we have even more faulty. We've basically skewed our own internal mechanism to be even worse than it was before.
Well, Justin, I hope that after today's discussion that you have the courage to take down that poster of Zac Efron that you have in your bedroom and just face your mirror image and just be accepting of your body.
Hey, Zac Efron is like the idealized version of me in some ways. So he's like,
when
the
are you
same
gonna
height.
Start a musical?
Yeah, he can sing. I can't carry a tune.
Yeah. Justin the musical would be very interesting.
It would be hilarious.
Yeah, so, speaking of hilarious, a man caused a scene at the Orlando International Airport. This made the news this week because he said some things that were construed to be more than vaguely racist. But he now says he did it on purpose to prove a point. So, an unruly passenger was arrested Thursday morning at Orlando International Airport. Jeffrey Epstein is charged with battery on law enforcement, resisting arrest, trespassing, after a warning, and disorderly conduct. Police said they were called to investigate reports of an unruly passenger at the American Airlines ticket counter. Police said that Epstein began to yell when he saw the officers arrive. After talking with the police, Epstein began to calm down but became agitated when he learned the airline was not going to allow him to fly because of his behavior. Epstein took off his backpack, put his hands in the air, and asked officers to arrest him. He said he was trying to make a point about police use of force. He said the disruption was done to, quote, prove a point. This is a quote from Epstein. He says, if you're going to do this to a white doctor who's 59 years old, for doing nothing, then why would black people trust you? I'm a conservative Republican, I'm a Trump guy, but until the police fix this problem, I don't blame black people for being upset when they get arrested. I was no danger, I was being loud because I wanted everyone to see, I wanted everything to be out in the open. Big companies have to take care of their customers, and when they call the cops in, they got to de-escalate, not escalate. Justin, does this sound right? Like this was a pre-planned thing that he was trying to prove a point about how police treat black people? Because at one point, it's not in the article, but I think at one point he says something like, you're treating me like a black man or something like that.
Yes, and that's why it blew up on social media, because there's video of a white guy getting arrested in the Orlando airport going, you're treating me like a black person, which out of context, that sounds incredibly racist.
Yeah, it's probably is incredibly racist. But point being, what the hell is going on here? Really?
I mean, it could have been a stunt he did, but it's impossible to know. What the thing is that makes this story so ridiculous to me is he's someone who, through his defense, is trying to show he's not racist, but then actually just comes off as super racist. Where the first thing you go to is, well, if that's how they're going to treat a white guy, how do you think they're going to feel if they're black? It's like, dude, really? Really?
You're not helping.
Also, if this really was his plan, your plan is to prove that police are brutal by antagonizing them and escalating the situation and then putting the responsibility for them to de-escalate it. It's like somebody starts punching you in the face and then they punch you back. You go, why are you punching me back? Why are you escalating the situation? Well, maybe you shouldn't have punched me first.
Yeah, it would help.
Yeah. I feel like this, the last story encapsulated like the filters we live in. This story encapsulates the way we interact in this country. Like, isn't this not a perfect example of the way the two sides interact? And I'm not saying, like, the cops are the left or the cops are the right or anything. I'm just saying this is the way people interact and try to prove their points nowadays and try to exist. Nobody thinks of, like, the most expedient way to get through a situation.
Right. They try to escalate so that they can win the outrage game.
Yes.
And in this case, this guy was just a total moron.
So, he was a total moron because he tried to escalate that, and then he tried to virtue signal at the end, where he'd be like, oh, I was just trying to help black people. And everyone's like, no, no,
no,
no.
Yeah, William, so this to me seems a little bit like a backwards rationalization to make himself look a little less racist. Because, as a side note, I was somewhat with him up until the racial points, meaning I have been to the Orlando International Airport, and I, too, want to scream and throw things every time I have to go through that godforsaken airport. Because dear city of Orlando, just because I'm in proximity to Disney World does not mean I want to get on a tram to go everywhere. Thank you.
I disagree.
So, William, do you think this was just a...
And I want it to say things in Spanish after it says things in English everywhere in the city.
Please stand clear of the doors. Por favor, manténgase alejado de las puertas.
I'm home!
So, William, to me this seems like a backwards rationalization. What say you?
Yes, I definitely think it is a backwards rationalization, though this is an innovation in intersectionalism. I think we all should use this excuse from now on. There's really no way out of it. So I think that, yes, it was a backwards rationalization, but I think if properly executed, this could get you out of trouble.
Careful with that properly executed and police in the same story. That's
well, and that's insinuating you're going to do it to help black people.
Yeah. You should do it. You should choose some other oppressed minority. I don't know. Maybe trans people, because
just name anyone who,
that's harder to question. Because you know he could be trans, right?
Could be. No one's asked. Yeah. We all assumed his gender.
You just had trouble sexist. Coming up with an oppressed group there. Just name anyone who's not a white man.
Well, I was trying to think of one that's not obvious just by looking at his picture, right?
Yeah.
So that,
I mean,
that's
a Jew.
What works.
Couldn't even say he's Jewish. You had to say he is a Jew.
A Jew. Yep.
Okay.
Well, I'm about to go to Orlando airport. So in a couple months, so I'll give this a try. Probably on the way back, since I'd like to enjoy my Disney trip on the way out there.
Well, enjoy all those trams.
I will.
Get off a plane for 3 hours and get immediately on a tram. Jeez.
So I just want to be clear. In order to get out of trouble nowadays, all I have to say is I was trying to help black people.
No, trans people.
Right.
Yeah. It has to be something that you're that you could be, so people have to scratch their head.
So yeah, as so a white male, even if I fall on my sword, it's not enough?
Not enough. Nope. Your sacrifice means nothing because you're still part of the patriarchy, power, whatever thing.
Yeah. Fall harder next time. Okay. So speaking of oppressed religions, the Satanic Temple has unveiled a statue at the Arkansas State Capitol to protest for separation of church and state and religious diversity. So, dozens. I love when stories start with dozens, and you know it means that this is a non-story. Dozens attended a rally held by the Satanic Temple at the Arkansas State Capitol on Thursday. The rally comes after the Arkansas legislature approved the placement of a Ten Commandments monument on the Capitol grounds. During the Satanic Temple's rally for the First Amendment, a more than 8-foot-tall Baphomet, does anyone know how to pronounce this? Baphomet statue, B-A-P-H-O-M-E-T statue, was unveiled. Those against the rally also attended, telling the news organization that they had hoped to spread God's love. Following the installation of the Ten Commandments monument, the Satanic Temple filed a lawsuit to have its statue placed on the same grounds in the name of religious pluralism and the First Amendment. During the 2017 legislative session, the Satanic Temple sent a letter to Arkansas legislators asking for lawmakers to sponsor a bill that would allow the Baphomet statue on Capitol grounds, but not one lawmaker responded, shock and awe. The rally had 5 speakers, including the Satanic Temple's spokesperson and co-founder, and was at the Arkansas State Capitol from 1 to 3 p.m. Very convenient for everyone. The quote from Lucian Greaves, the spokesperson and co-founder of the Satanic Temple, sounds like it, was this. Quote, "The event is intended to be an inclusive gathering where the Satanic Temple will be celebrating pluralism along with Christian and secular speakers. People of many faiths will come together at the Capitol to reject the Arkansas State Legislature's efforts to privilege one religion over others." Justin, appropriate counter-protest? Or why don't you just go home and have a beer and chill out, man?
Well, don't have a beer because alcohol is bad? You're asking the straight edge guy that question? Like... Jesus. I mean, that's always the answer.
You should
go
home
nowadays.
And have a root beer and chill out about people going home and having a beer.
I can't even have a root beer right now because I have braces on. Don't get me started, man.
Oh, I thought it was Lent or something.
No, I haven't had a soda in like 4 months. It's insane.
Wow.
And by the way, I believe it's pronounced Tom Brady because that's the statue of a goat, isn't it?
It is the statue of a goat man. Yes, indeed.
I was just confused at how Arkansas put up a statue of Tom Brady before Boston did.
It's true. I never actually concretized that. Statue, concretized. That someday there will literally be a statue of Tom Brady in Boston that we can go visit.
Yeah.
Never thought about that until this moment. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Slash sad.
So I just have a question about the logistics of this.
Okay.
Like, is this a legitimate concrete statue?
No, and because it's a legitimate bronze statue.
Okay, so it's bronze. So yes. Even that's the case. Is it on, like, wheels or something? Like, how do you just build a statue on public property without someone stopping you? It's not like you can instantly, like, replicate. Like, there's Star Trek replicators. It's like, whoop, there's a statue of Tom Brady. Like, how do you get it there? Like, they just let them do it? This is what I imagine. I imagine they, like, built it in, like, their satanic cave, and then they, like, wheeled it across town, and there was, like, one float parade across town, and there's the Satanism parade. Like,
I just like to picture Jean-Luc Picard saying, "Make it so," and then there appears a statue of Tom Brady. So it's an 8.5-foot-tall bronze statue, and I understand that all Baphomet statues actually just levitate in the air because of the greatness of Baphomet. All hail his goatness. So, William, should legislatures be putting up Ten Commandments on Capitol grounds? Is that a legit thing?
I don't think so. I think that you wouldn't see this in most other states. I know that there's been Supreme Court cases saying that it's okay, that it's not part of establishing a religion. But, you know, it's not all the Ten Commandments are particularly good. and they're not the root of law in the United States. So even the argument that that senator made in his Facebook statement doesn't really make sense. At the same time, isn't this all just one really big distraction? I mean, you've got money being spent on a statue, and then you have more money being spent on a statue. No one really is getting anything done, right? I don't know. It just seems like a huge distraction. I don't see if putting the Ten Commandments led to a bunch of other religious laws in the Capitol there, then that would be one thing. But there's other ways to fight those things rather than focusing on the statue itself. It would be the religious, the laws being influenced by religion or trying to establish a religion that I would fight against.
Yeah. I mean, even when I was in high school, when I was religious and more of a conservative, I still found this crap disappointing when, like, legislatures or whoever wanted to put up 10 commandments in front of the Capitol or the courthouse or whatever. And my reasoning was always this, which I know evades unprincipled conservatives, which is these things cost money. You don't have the right to just spend everyone's money on stuff that you think is cool. That's not the point of you being in government. You're supposed to spend money well and spend money on important government functions. This is not one of them. You want to put up a statue in your lawn? Pay for it.
Daniel, I have a question for you. How many adulterers walk past those Ten Commandments every day to get into the Capitol?
6 out of 10. I don't know.
It's got to be higher than that. The legislature? Come on now. A religiously repressed community? It's got to be higher.
It's got to be up there. So, I don't know. Justin, this kind of stuff where it's
isn't
like...
Isn't the government, while we're talking about these contradicting the Ten Commandments, isn't the government the center of coveting thy neighbor's goods?
Yeah. That's a very
good point. That's entirely what they do, right? The
planned sneeze. Sorry. I just hear the sneeze come through right in the middle of silence.
I thought we were just ignoring those kind of audio now, though. I feel like I got shamed earlier. Justin, stop listening. I got like 8 people yelling at me here. Like, what am I supposed to do?
A moment of silence. So, yes, it is. It is totally a false idol. Certainly for those on the left, but also for those on the right. Yeah. And speaking of adulterers, coveting thy neighbor's ass. Legislators. So they've broken 3 right there, right? I mean, I'm not intimately familiar with the Ten Commandments, but that sounds like 3 down, 7 more to go. Speaking of, I don't know, an ass, Andrew Cuomo says America is great.
That's where I thought you were going with that transition. That's where I thought you were going. That's why I wasn't saying anything.
Andrew Cuomo says America is great after previously saying not so much. Governor Andrew Cuomo on Friday walked back his controversial comment about American greatness from earlier in the week, calling them inartful and saying he believes the country has always been great. Cuomo, a Democrat running for governor of New York, had been facing continued backlash from President Donald Trump and the governor's Republican foes, after saying in a rally, America was, quote, never that great, while taking a jab at Trump's campaign slogan during a speech on women's rights in Manhattan on Wednesday. During a conference call with reporters, Cuomo dialed it back a bit, saying he does not, in fact, question the country's greatness. Quote, the expression I used the other day was inartful, so I want to be very clear. Of course America is great, and of course America has always been great. No one questions that. As you know, my family is evidence of American greatness. My grandparents came to this country as poor immigrants, and their son became governor, and his son became governor. That's never been a question. Also, side note for me, I don't think nepotism is necessarily making America great, but nonetheless.
Make America nepotistic again.
But Trump continued to knock Cuomo for his remarks on Wednesday, tweeting 3 times about it on Friday before moving along. This was a Trump tweet. Big pushback on Governor Andrew Cuomo of New York for his really dumb statement about America's lack of greatness. I have already made America great again. Just look at the markets, jobs, military, setting records, and we will do even better. Andrew, quote, choked badly, comma, mistake, exclamation point. Every time I think about the fact that he's our president, it just just hurts me a little more. So, Justin, is this an unprincipled hack, sort of quasi-revealing what he really feels about America? Should we care? Should we move on? Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yes to all of that.
Want to unpack it a little bit for the audience in this audio podcast?
I mean, we should just move on. But here's the thing. This is revealing of a couple of things about what you just asked and what you just said. The first is, regardless of if you like Trump or not, this is why his slogan was designed the way it was. It was a giant trap, right? In the same way that, like, Obama's slogans were all hope and change. Those were made because, like, who's going to be like, I'm against hope and I'm against change. So they made an ironclad slogan that you couldn't argue with. It's the same thing here with Make America Great Again.
To be fair, he just stole it from Reagan, but yeah.
Well, really, everything Donald Trump does is not stolen. Like, naming one thing Donald Trump, like, he made his money off of his dad's name. He made his media empire off of Mark Burnett, the reality TV producer. He roused the ghosts of Ronald Reagan to become president. Like, is there anything Donald Trump has done that has not been mimicking or ripping off someone else?
No, I'm just pointing it out.
Right. Yeah. But the point is, he did that because it's a trap. There's no way to get around it. And Cuomo fell into the trap, right? If you fall in on one side, you're like, yeah, I agree, make America great again, you have to vote for him. And on the other hand, if you go, oh, well, I disagree with him, America was never great, you've just shot yourself in the foot. And that goes into the second thing. Are we literally to the point now that people can just say one thing and then the next day go, actually, I didn't mean that. I meant the opposite. That's 100% what he did. Yeah. America was never that great. And then the next day he goes, you know what? Actually, I didn't mean that. America is great and always has been great. Well, which is it, fuckface? Pick one. You can't just say, well, are we really letting people get away with this now?
It's pronounced Cuomo.
Like, really? Yesterday, I murdered that woman. And then in court the next day, no, actually, I didn't mean that. I did not murder that woman. It doesn't work that way.
It does in the current culture, and to be totally fair, Trump does it literally every day.
Yeah, it's Schrodinger's statements.
And then the next day he'll be like, I didn't mean that. Do you remember during the debates when, I think it was someone from Telemundo asked a question, and in Trump's 2-minute answer, he started off by saying how horrible Telemundo was, started to reply, in the middle of his answer said, I've got some friends at Telemundo, they're fine, and then at the end of his answer, talked about how great Telemundo was. In one answer.
See, that's artful. That's what Cuomo meant when he said that it wasn't artful. He did not include both the negative and the positive in the same statement.
Now,
that's why this is all ridiculous, because you've got one guy who fucked up and is trying to be like, no, I meant the opposite of what I meant, who is saying that because a guy who always contradicts himself called him out. Like,
I know,
fucking move on. Like, this is why none of us should care either. It's like,
exactly,
you watch it, it's like, do you ever see that episode of South Park where they're like, cripple fight, and then like Jimmy and Timmy fight for like 45 minutes? Like, yeah, that's what this is.
I long for the day, and it would make my job obsolete, but that would be okay. I would go on to being a bartender or something. I long for the day when someone says, did you hear that thing Andrew Cuomo says? And the universal response is, who? Because it just doesn't matter that much who the governor is of New York. I long for that day. William, one of the more interesting elements of this story is Cynthia Nixon, who is challenging Cuomo in the Democratic primary. She's basically a socialist. And she had her spokesperson had this to say. Quote, instead of being a leader who stands up to Donald Trump, Andrew Cuomo backed down after a few insults from him today and folded like a cheap suit. It turns out Andrew Cuomo's tough talk was just that. I'm assuming she meant just talk and not tough talk, but did that.
Wait,
the
demonstrative I have a question.
Is
before William, William replies, I have a question. Like, Cynthia Nixon is in, like, the woman who starred in Sex and the City?
Yes.
Yes.
So she was in Sex and the City, so now she thinks she can run the city/state? That's how this works?
That's how this works.
She played a gay man like everyone else on Sex and the City, so now she's qualified to be governor.
Interesting, William. You just opened up a can of worms, but we'll return to that in a later episode.
So my question, William, is what Cynthia Nixon trying to say that Cuomo should have doubled down on his America has never been great rhetoric? Does she think that that's a winning strategy?
I think
and also,
she does.
Is that a winning strategy?
I think she does, and I think it is in the case of the fringe left Democrats. So, and as long as this is shocking to mainstream Democrats, I'm all for it. I say Cuomo should back out of the race and let this socialist run against whoever. I don't even know who the alternative is. It'll just be great to have some of these socialists defeated at the ballot box for saying that America has never been great.
It would be interesting. It'd be an interesting move. The Republican candidate for governor is Mark Molinaro, who is the Dutchess County executive.
He's so basically no chance in hell that he could win, right?
No, there's... you're basically running for governor of the city of New York is what you're running on.
Yep.
Because the rest of the state just doesn't matter.
I've heard if you had a lot of sex in that city, you can get elected.
Man, I'm never going to be governor of New York City.
Elect governor big.
Oh, well, this is degenerated and we're already talking about media. So you guys want to just to continue to talk about media?
Sure, I guess, because that's what we do.
Let's do it. Let's do it in The Hopeful Romantic with JML.
Put me into syndication. Broadcast to a network station of people viewing their favorite episodes. I can't find a new pitch to throw the studio. Focused on.
For the review, I want to talk about a couple of Netflix things. One movie, one the first episode of a series. We'll start with the movie. Daniel, I don't know how often you browse through whatever the new releases on Netflix are and the Netflix exclusive movies are. Is that something you do often?
I do it a couple times. Like, I do it where it's like I do it and then I do wait so long that I forget that I've ever done it. And so every time I have this exact reaction, which is I scroll through and I'm like, what the hell is this shit? And then I go back to the actual movies.
Yeah. So what the hell is this shit is exactly the reaction I had while watching a Netflix original movie the entire time. So if you remember, I saw Cock Blockers and I gave it a pretty good review. I thought it was pretty funny. Remember the John Cena movie with the three daughters after prom?
That was the name of that movie?
Well, it's called Blockers, but it was an emoji of a rooster with the blockers.
I was going to say, I thought I would have heard that. Yeah. Okay.
But the girl who was starring in it was this Indian girl. She played John Cena's daughter. The wife was Indian, before you say anything. So she was 100% Indian. I'm sorry.
She's also 100% American and 100% oppressor.
Yes, exactly. So... she's in a Netflix original movie, and I don't know if you've scrolled through and seen this one. It's called The Package. Have you heard of this one?
So she's in a movie called Cock Blockers and The Package.
Netflix, brought to you by 13-year-old boys.
Oh, yes. It gets worse. It gets worse. So have you ever wanted to watch a movie about a dude getting his dick cut off? Then this is the movie for you!
Is this the Elena Bobbitt story?
No, man. So this is a story of three guys on spring break are going to go out into the woods.
And they meet Caitlyn Jenner.
Basically almost turns himself into Caitlyn Jenner. And one of the guy's sisters come and one of the guy's ex-girlfriends come. And this guy has like a butterfly knife and he's like playing with it. And at one point when he's drunk, he goes off into the woods by himself in the dark. And he's playing with the knife, and he takes a piss, and he accidentally cuts his dick off. So the rest of the movie is then he gets medevaced, and they have 12 hours to get the dick back to the hospital so he can get it reattached to him.
Hold on. This is a real premise to a movie?
This is a real premise to a movie. Don't forget that there's an entire romantic subplot between the guy's sister and the main character of the movie, the entire movie, and the movie culminates in them kissing.
I thought you were going to say there's a romantic subplot between the penis and a snail or something.
The only reason, I know you said you saw it on your Netflix queue. The only reason I saw this is because there's been a huge push on YouTube. Like they've been, you know, answering questions and like doing interviews and everything else, like on all these things on YouTube. And I'm just like, what the hell is this? Why would anyone want to watch this? And I don't know. I must not be the target demographic. Maybe because I like dicks too much, but, and good comedy. It just didn't look interesting or fun at all.
Well, you said something interesting there, William, because I know they say conversion therapy isn't possible, but after watching this movie, I have never hated dicks more in my life, because Netflix was totally taking advantage of the idea that there's no rating system. They have a prosthetic dick in this movie so often. I've never seen a non-porn with so much dick in it.
Man, oh man.
This movie, though, is the natural escalation of what happens when we embrace, like, the road trip hangover mentality. That's all this is. It's like, what ridiculous things can we have happen in this kind of movie? That's all it is.
It's situational naturalism.
Okay, that's interesting. Can you unpack that a little bit? What do you mean by situational naturalism?
Well, it's a situation. Yeah, it's a
whatever
package. I mean that it's trying to be a situational comedy, right? Like playing what if this happens, but the events are just arbitrarily put in to escalate the quote unquote comedy, right? So it's just layer upon layer upon layer of ridiculous with no
right,
meaning to drive it.
Yeah. Which shows like how bad naturalism is, because it's actually not people acting naturally. Right?
Right.
In romanticism, you would have it focus on their choices and what are the logical choices people would make. And you would have them make a choice to demonstrate a certain idea. Here, it's like you said, one of the things is when they're trying to run back, they find a ranger station. But the ranger station is abandoned. And then there's a snake inside the ranger station. And then can you guess what happens next?
They send the snake to the hospital to have it attached to his pelvis.
No, that's actually more creative than what they did. So the snake attacks them and accidentally bites the dick. So then they think they have to get the venom out of the dick.
God, stop it. Just stop it. Okay, so there is some merit to the idea of we're just going, like being Netflix saying, we're just going to give money to people we think are smart and funny and let them do whatever they want. But it's films like this where I think, that's gone a little too far, Netflix. I think there should be some studio oversight where they go, have you said this out loud? Like this premise of the snake biting the penis and you having to remove the venom. Have you said it out loud? Because it sounds terrible. And we're not going to let you do that because this is a lot of money. No? I don't know.
Is there a model, though, just to get people to click? And so, because people have clicked on this, then they've succeeded?
I guess. I don't get it. I don't get it.
Look, the lead girl's funny, all right? And I'm glad she's getting money for being able to act when she doesn't look... I mean, she just looks like a completely normal, average girl. So, you know, there's something to be said for her and the fact that she's actually been in a major movie, Blockers, which was really funny, and now she's in this Netflix movie and she's getting paid. So good for her.
Now, this makes me look bad when I say things like, are we out of ideas? Where are all the original ideas? And then this comes up. This makes me look bad, right? Because I would watch, I don't know, Transformers 19 over this movie any day.
I mean, I guess it makes you look bad because they came up with an original idea.
And it's terrible, right?
But it's still, it's not
Wait,
an original
is
idea.
This, I was going to say, is this original idea? Isn't this like any like drunk campfire right. story? Like...
Exactly. So I know there's the argument that there's only like four or six stories or whatever it is. But like I said, this is literally just another version of Road Trip or The Hangover where something absurd happens and then you have to keep escalating throughout and you go on a journey and you escalate that journey and you escalate the ridiculousness in that journey. That's all it is.
Yeah. Can we stop talking about this now?
Yeah, so I want to talk about something else on Netflix really quickly. Daniel, did you watch any of Disenchantment?
And yes,
I say
I did.
Disenchantment because I'm pretty sure I kept saying Disenchanted next week and nobody, Daniel, corrected me. Because
I didn't know.
I was correcting you when I was listening this week, but you couldn't hear the shouts in my car.
Listener.
Yeah, so, I watched the first 5 episodes.
Wow, you watched 5. I've only watched 1, so let's not spoil. But I have to say, it felt a little underdeveloped at times to me, the writing-wise. Like, it felt like they were just, like, sort of jumping between points, and there wasn't a lot of elegance there. But for me, I find Elfo to be absolutely hysterical. Like, once it cut where she's like, I wish I could live in a land where everyone was happy all the time. And then they cut to that land and showed Elfo. All the jokes about the elves and from Elfo at that point forward, I just think are hysterical. I don't know what that says about me, but I will continue watching this just for that character.
Yeah, so for anyone to explain from last week, if you didn't listen, this is basically Futurama or The Simpsons, kind of, but in like the Game of Thrones world-ish. It's fantasy, but by Matt Groening. And it stars a princess and an elf and a demon. Groening? Grining? Graining? Yeah. And I have to agree with you. So this goes back to just my critique a few minutes ago, the Netflix model, which is these episodes range from like 24 to 28 minutes. And they would all be so much better if they were 21 or 22 minutes.
The first episode was 36 to 39, I believe.
Yeah, and it would have been better as a 22-minute episode. Now, 22 is sort of an arbitrary thing that came out of TV, but what it does is it forces you to edit and be ruthless about what it is you actually want to include in your show. And yes, I absolutely can see that sometimes you can cut out things that are essential, and that's bad, and you shouldn't be 100% stuck to that. But when you just allow anything to be in there, you get some scenes that go on unnaturally long. You get scenes that go on in ways that don't make any sense to the plot. I don't want to give away specific things, but I feel like the show could use a good editor, and it'd be a lot better. Futurama just felt like a tighter show, because they had to conform to that 22-minute episode. That being said, it's pretty funny, especially at times I've laughed out loud, which is pretty rare for this kind of show. And Elfo is by far the most hilarious character in an adult cartoon series in a long time. He's a riveting character, and he continues on a very riveting, hilarious story arc throughout the show. So you should tune in just for the interaction between Elfo and the demon, really. But Elfo, great character. So you should watch this if you like Futurama, and you shouldn't watch this if you didn't like Futurama, or if you don't like that sort of humor that is often very what's the word, Justin? Not Justin humor. Like, you're not, I don't know.
So actually funny?
No, yeah, they're both funny. It's just, never mind. If you like Futurama or The Simpsons, you should watch this. If not, don't. There you go.
What do you say? Are they esoteric or am I esoteric? What are you trying to say, man?
I don't know. Sometimes, so you go back and forth from being esoteric and being, like, ridiculously over the top. Uh-huh. And this show isn't ridiculously over the top. It's more esoteric.
Okay. There. See? I gave you the terminology.
Thank you.
And, William, before you go, I just want to say that the demon also reminds me of the hormone monster from Big Mouth.
Yes. A little less ridiculous. A little more subdued, but yeah.
Same type of idea, though, and similar voice. I would, if I didn't know it wasn't Will Arnett, I wouldn't be surprised if it was. Oh, no, actually, it's Nick Kroll doing a Will Arnett impersonation, so never mind.
Right, 'cause I thought it was Will Arnett, too.
Yeah.
So I haven't seen this yet, but as a huge Futurama fan, I'm looking forward to giving it a binge soon. And one thing, though, is a lot of people on Facebook that are from my friends were really disappointed with the show. So I take that as a tentatively good sign because most of those folks didn't like Futurama for the same reason that I did. So so it's going to be interesting. I'm trying to go in with, you know, a nice, healthily low set of expectations being a first season show, but I'm looking forward to it.
I would say it's comparable to what Futurama was in its first season, which was a little strange, a little clunky. It didn't quite gel the way it was supposed to. It feels like that. But it has a lot of the characteristics where there's this big universe, there's lots of one-off characters who are super funny, one-off jokes that are super funny. But I think it'll gel. I think they'll hit their stride. It's got great potential.
Yeah, and the main character is going to be very similar to Fry, where the whole point of the demon is there are these two evil witches, warlocks, whatever you want to call them. I don't know what the social justice term for non-gendered people who practice evil magic is, are trying to corrupt her. And they even said at one point, they're like, oh, the demon's doing such a good job. This could be very quick, or it could take years. So the entire premise is sort of going to be like Fry in Futurama, where you have this person who seems like he could be a good person, but always does things that are messed up and immoral. And it's when he walks that line that creates the conflict and also creates the comedy. So they're going to do that with the main girl, Bean, as well.
Yeah. Bean, Fry, all characters named after food. I don't get it.
Interesting. I was wondering why they did that, but that explains it. So they definitely were trying to go more Futurama than The Simpsons, I think.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. So we're going to do Trailer Takedown here, but we're going to do it a little bit differently, because we're going to talk about what's going to happen on December 21st.
Trailer Takedown.
Thank you for your intro, Trailer Takedown, Dan. We appreciate it. But we're not going to be using the hugger tackle this week, because according to an article from Entertainment Weekly, Hollywood is going to be releasing 5 major films on December 21st. So rather than saying if we're going to hug or tackle each one, especially because we've already talked about like 3 of them, I believe, we're going to rank them from 5 to 1. So the one we would most likely see, or the one we would... Oh, sorry. Scratch that. Reverse it. I just really wonkered it. So start with the one we would least like to see and the one we would most like to see. So if we were forced to choose and somebody was like, rank them 5 through 1 or you're off the show, you're going to rank them 5 through 1 or you're off the show. Got it?
Got it.
What if I'd rather be off the show?
Okay. So... to name the 5 movies, I think they're in alphabetical order. I think is how they do them here. We have Aquaman, Alita Battle Angel, Bumblebee, Holmes and Watson, Welcome to Marwen. Gentlemen, are you ready to say your number 5?
Yes.
Who wants to go first? William, go ahead.
Holmes and Watson at number 5.
Daniel?
As a quick side note, the article also has Mary Poppins in here.
Yeah, but you spoiled it. They said that comes out on the Wednesday before, so at the end...
I didn't know it was a spoiler. We didn't talk about this in the show prep.
That's why I always ask. I said, do you guys have any notes? And you say no, so just let me run things. Step aside.
Well, I actually thought that the 5 movies were the 5 trailers, and we weren't actually counting the one, but there is no trailer. So that's how I interpreted it. Do you want to cut this from the recording?
No, because I think people will see that will not change your rankings, right?
That's true. Number 5 is Welcome to Marwen.
Okay, so I had Holmes and Watson as number 5 as well, because I don't like Will Ferrell. I don't get the whole obsession with Will Ferrell and John C. Reilly. My girlfriend had me watch Step Brothers. It was okay. I don't love it. I don't hate it. But it's just like, do we need another Sherlock Holmes type thing with the two of them? So to me, that's obviously number 5.
Welcome to Marwen, to remind people, is the Steve Carell I'm broken and psychologically damaged but play with dolls film.
Yes.
I can't even stand it. I can't even stand talking about it. I can't stand looking at the trailer.
Yeah, Daniel, that's why it's number 4 on my list.
Excellent.
Well, what's number 4 on your list?
Well, I have a tie for number 5, actually, which is Bumblebee. I just can't. I said earlier I'd watched Transformers 19, but that doesn't count Bumblebee. Bumblebee's the least interesting character to me in all of Transformers.
Well, you're saying the package is number 6 on your list.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So Bumblebee
if you stay home and watch Netflix, you will not be watching The Package.
if literally they removed all content from the internet and there was only the package, I would go under the sink and just take the bleach out and pour it into my eyes. That sounds much more entertaining than watching the package. So Bumblebee is a tie for number five for me.
Justin, what did you have?
At number four.
I had number four as Bumblebee. Even though John Cena is in this movie, I just can't get behind it. Especially, dude, this is the part that is absurd about this trailer, because we've never talked about this trailer. So she's underneath this car trying to fix it, and then it transforms into a giant robot, and then she holds her hands up and is like, I'm not going to hurt you. What the fuck? Like, you're not worried about this car transformed into a giant robot? You think it's worried about you hurting it? Like, shouldn't you run the other fucking direction?
Didn't she just have her hands on his nuts, though?
I was thinking, like, what? I mean, what is she doing under the car with the...
So you're not taking the interpretation of she just sexually assaulted it, so...
Yeah, that's not an oil drip.
Oh, is that the real reason Bumblebee can't talk? Because he's been traumatized by being sexually assaulted by a human?
Bumblebee sees a therapist. Yeah.
That would go to number one. I'd watch Bumblebee sees a therapist. If the therapist is John Cena.
No, it would be... who's the giant black man? President Camacho. What's his name?
Terry Crews.
It'd be Terry Crews. That's who the therapist would be.
There's an added level of irony there because of what happened in Raw. Right.
That was
yeah.
Except I couldn't number come up with a joke because I couldn't remember.
Number three for me is Bumblebee. I think it just barely squeaks out at number three. It was a really tough call. My number two choice, not to spoil, and my number three choice both have action in them. So I thought, well, which would have
the two
better?
All the movies left have action.
Yeah.
In them,
so I was trying to like, well, which would have better action? And unfortunately, I know that Bumblebee will all be blurry shaky cam. So it degraded to number three.
Hmm.
I actually agree with that, William. That was one of the things I thought about while watching this. I was like, yeah, this doesn't look too bad. And then I was like, oh, but the action's going to be terrible. I literally had that thought while watching the trailer.
Hmm. So what was your number three, Justin?
My number three was Welcome to Marwen. I think the premise looks better than you're giving me credit for. We talked about that with Trailer Takedown. So I'd much rather watch that than another Will Ferrell and John C. Reilly vehicle comedy picture and then Bumblebee. I just think it would be more original and more interesting.
At least Bumblebee will have explosions.
Hmm. Well, after counting the votes, I have a tie for number five, which is Holmes and Watson. Just came in tied for number five. So, yeah.
Yeah, I can't imagine them not doing anything but shitting on the characters.
Yeah. Although, if I was forced, like, no, it's equally as bad. That's why it came in at number five. So, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Isn't that Will Ferrell's entire gimmick? Like he just shits on whatever character he is.
Yeah.
He just makes his character look like a moron.
Yep.
Yeah. All right, moving on.
Number two, William.
This was a tough one, and I've toggled back and forth, but I think that Alita, Battle Angel, is number two.
For me,
it looked visual and interesting. So that's what got it up the rankings, but then I don't know, there's something off about the animation and I don't know what.
Well, we'll talk about that in a second. For me, number two, I had Aquaman. Daniel, what'd you have for number two?
To be clear, Alita the Battle Angel is Robert Rodriguez directed James Cameron production of the iconic manga, where basically this robot chick kicks ass. I was just looking over the numbers, and it turns out that I have a tie for number five, and that is Alita the Battle Angel. And it came in, it might have eked its way up to four had it not been for the fact that until they said her name, I read it dyslexically as Attila the Battle Angel.
What a better title.
A much better title. And when it became Alita, I was like, oh, no, dropped it down. So tied for number five, Alita the Battle Angel.
All right, number one, William, you have what?
I have Aquaman. Can't look into his sexy eyes without wanting to see that movie.
I have Alita, the Battle Angel, and Daniel, you have in a tie for fifth place?
Actually, coming in at number four is Aquaman.
Wow.
Which looks only marginally less worse than all of these other movies. But it still looks terrible. I want to be clear.
It so looks here's like, the question.
To me, it looks like a crappier version of Thor, which was a pretty bad movie.
I don't know if anything can be as bad as the first Thor. That was so boring. The first Thor is terrible.
But this is like underwater politics instead of in the sky politics. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
So the question then is, why did I pick Alita over Aquaman? Because you guys both agree on Aquaman over Alita. And Aquaman is, of course, produced by Zack Snyder. It's the Zack Snyder interpretation of the character. So it seems very strange that I did this. First of all, I don't trust DC anymore. I just don't. I don't think they're going to do anything correct with this. I think it's going to be a hollow shell of what it could have been.
And a hollow conch shell.
I like Robert Rodriguez. I mean, Machete is one of my favorite movies. If you want to see a great action movie, watch Machete. Awesome. It's a great, great movie. My biggest trepidation about Alita is the fact that James Cameron is producing it. It's heavily CG. And then there was the one line in there. It's like, I come from a world where the strong prey on the weak. I got to ask you guys something. I don't know if I've ever formulated in this way, or we talked about it on this way in the show. Why do people have this obsession with this nonsensical idea? Like, if you're the strong, are you really going to go around like picking on all the weak people and preying on them? Like, that doesn't make sense to me. Wouldn't you just ignore the weak people because they're in the way?
Yeah, that is an interesting way of seeing the world, right? Like, what do the weak have that the strong need? It's going to be the other way around. Yeah.
Right. You either need something from them or you're threatened by them. So neither of those are what the weak present to the strong. So why would the strong even pay attention to them?
Blown the whole thing open right here, right now.
So that's, you know, that's I think the negatives of are of it. But that's why I think, Daniel, your ranking is very well taken. Is even though they're releasing five things, they pretty much all look like crap. So if this is like what we're getting as like big five movies, what does that say about the state of movies right now?
Yeah, it is an abysmal array of garbage. I just could not believe how terrible all these films looked. And the Aquaman trailer, even though it looks just marginally less crappy than the other movies, even has a line that's something like, you're at your best when you're not thinking. Gross. Where does that come from?
I'm sure Tom Brady wins the Super Bowl by not thinking about the other team's defense and what the best play to run would be.
That's right. He's at his best when he's not thinking. That Tom Brady.
So Justin, is one of these movies going to blink, though? I mean, they're all the same weekend?
They're all going to blink. All of them are
going
to blink.
This can't be true. I mean, you know, this is going on in the game industry right now, too. We've got October. You've got all these games coming out in October, and there are already news stories about pre-orders being down for some of them. So you've got Call of Duty Black Ops 4, part of a large series, very popular. Battlefield 5, same thing. Assassin's Creed Odyssey, same thing. Soul Calibur 6. Red Dead Redemption 2. So all sequels, right? All parts of big franchises, all coming out in the mid, like in within 3 weeks in October. And they're like, everyone's kind of like worried because the pre-sales are down for all of these franchises because they're all fucking coming out at the same time.
Yeah, we don't have unlimited amounts of money or time, people.
Right, but if you look at a lot of these movies, I only think the ones that I think are going to blink are either going to be Alita and Aquaman or both, because the Transformers movie is never going to blink because they sell and they're going to think everyone's going to choose them over everything else. So Bumblebee is not going to blink. And then the comedy is not going to blink because they're going to say they're offering something different. And Welcome to Marwin is not going to blink because they think they're offering something different as well. So it's just going to be a question of if Aquaman and Alita are confident enough to stay there. And I just think the way DC and Warner Brothers are run, that at least Aquaman will move.
Yeah.
but one is already blinked. Disney has moved Mary Poppins Returns to the Wednesday before. So, gentlemen, does that change your rankings at all?
Mary Poppins might be tied for number 4.
Wow. Aquaman versus Mary Poppins. Interesting.
Yeah. Now, if that was a movie, like that was the actual movie.
What a crossover.
That's number 1 with an exclamation point, my friend. Because she's in the air with the umbrella. He's in the water. Like, how do they fight?
Yeah. I'd see it.
It seems like they would never be able to battle. I don't think I've seen Mary Poppins jump into a puddle, but not, you know, do battle inside of the water. So
just them screaming at each other from a distance. If you come down here, I'll kick your ass. Why don't you come up here, you bastard?
But that's the sequel. Mary Poppins versus Aquaman versus Sharknado. And they fight inside the Sharknado.
Oh, franchises. Now, if Aquaman can control, like, the water in the ocean, does that mean he can control, like, the rain and stuff? Is he, like, Storm from X-Men?
I think it's only salt water.
Oh.
So if I were Aquaman, I'd really put out the wildfires in California.
I would get, like, a salt cannon and shoot it into clouds, right?
I could
control clouds and stuff. Aquaman needs me as his COO, I feel.
No, because you're thinking, Daniel, and he's at his best when he doesn't think.
That's right. That's right. Forgot already. These movies are crap.
All right. Speaking about art and not thinking, we're going to continue this discussion of art and the degradation of it and culture in Life on the Midside. Anyone who's listened to this show for a while knows I'm a big pop punk fan. William, you're also a big pop punk fan, correct?
Yep.
So one of the iconic bands in the genre and one of the iconic albums is Say Anything, and the album was Is a Real Boy. Is a Real Boy was the journey of someone who was in a culture that, like ours, told him he was unimportant and told him it didn't matter and he had no self-esteem. So on this album, he resorted to drugs. But at the end, on the final song, Admit It, it became an individualist anthem. You know, I'll do just fine with my car and my guitar. And it's all about being alone and being on his own. And in the song, he is lampooning and asking the hipsters and the pseudo bohemians, as they say on the song, as he says on the song, to admit their basic secondhandedness. So the whole album was about that, about overcoming secondhandedness and overcoming relativism to becoming an individual. Now we're 13 years later, and Max Bemis, the songwriter and lead singer of Say Anything, has released a 10-page summation, a goodbye summation he called it for the band, where he talks about the sequel album to Is a Real Boy. Notice even the name, right? Is a Real Boy. So it's about becoming a real boy. And saying goodbye to the band. And I read this summation, William, Daniel, and I was deeply disturbed. I was disturbed for two reasons. First of all, he's ending the band, and he's saying he's ending it because he finally loves it. And this is the first time over his entire career that he loved the band that he was in. I can't understand someone doing something for that long that they hated and didn't love. And the fact that when he loves it, that's when he decides to end it. That seems really messed up to me. And then in this statement, he said the album is about how the main character of Is a Real Boy, the one who becomes the individualist at the end, this is the plot of the new album, the final album. This main character is from Is a Real Boy, has sex with a guy. He then tries to have a relationship with the guy, but the guy rejects him, so he then murders the guy and commits suicide. And the reason Max Bemis has made this as the story, by the way, my girlfriend's laughing in the background because of how absurd it sounds. It does. It sounds ridiculous. But the reason he has decided to make this the story of the final album is because even though he's married and has multiple children with a woman, he claims that he just decided to be with a woman, even though he's been attracted to men his whole life. Now, he doesn't even decide to define himself as bisexual. He defines himself as, I don't even know what the term he used was. He used several. So this is why he's decided to do that, because he wants to speak out about what he sees as the truth and the problem in the world. And this really disturbs me, because here's a genre which is about individualism and about being yourself. And to me, it's, you know, very masculine in a way. And he's basically saying that his main character that embodies the genre is toxically masculine, and that he's an evil, messed up person. And to me, this is a huge sign of our culture, and it's deeply disturbing, because here's somebody who made that album, and now he's not only making the complete opposite album, but he's basically destroying his original art that he created.
I don't know much about Say Anything. I do like some pop punk music, but I am particularly attracted to singers, so I don't think the Say Anything singer was particularly attractive to me musically. Or sexually, Justin.
He might have been. You're a dude, and apparently he's into dudes. Although, he might only be into them emotionally and not sexually. That wasn't clear.
Yeah, that wasn't clear either.
That was unclear.
Yeah.
Is this, to use a reference here, is this like a Gail Winan type of situation where he's built up this whole thing and now he's subverting it because he thinks this is what is actually virtuous and now no one cares as listening? I mean, what's the reaction to this in the world, the pop punk world?
I haven't seen the reaction, because I wrote on Twitter my response to it and then immediately unfollowed the band. I was like, I'm done. I don't care. So, but pop punk has been leaning this way in general. I mean, one of the things I've always wondered about punk in general is you go to Warped Tour and they're all like, yeah, fuck the man, fuck the government. Vote for the Green Party. Vote socialist. Vote Bernie Sanders. I'm like, do you not understand what you just did there? Or they even had a thing where, now, again, I don't know the exact truth or not of this, but they started trying to end bands' careers because they were saying that there was a toxically masculine culture where the band members would sexually assault female fans. And they were claiming that was going on, and they were trying to get, like, one band, some guy came out and apologized and was kicked out of a band for sexual assault. But then their manager also managed other bands. And because the other bands didn't come out and, like, write a letter decrying the manager or make a statement decrying the manager, they were like, we should all stop buying all of these band CDs because they're terrible bands for supporting sexual assault. And I'm like, so staying out of it is supporting it? So I wouldn't be surprised if people were like, yeah, this is true. Because I think we have a thing in our culture where we have mistaken emotionalism as individualism.
Yeah. Totally. Yeah, I'm being who I am. I'm being, you know, a radical individual because I do whatever my emotions tell me to do. That is a dangerous association.
Well, Justin, we've known for a while. I mean, I know that we've kind of talked about this kind of issue before, but you know, most pop punk bands is a mixture of romanticism and emotionalism, right? It is much more in line with the old school literary romantics, right? And there's really no other place for this to go, right? There's going to be a split between the folks who are more attached to that romanticism, the sort of more rational side of the romantic artist side, and then there's going to be the ones that are just in it for the emotionalism, and I mean, clearly you read this and like, this guy is like, something's wrong with him, right? Like, he's got a lot of psychological baggage to deal with. It sounds like he's really never come to terms with who he is.
This should have been called the Everyone Should See a Therapist edition.
It's 100% true, Daniel, what you just said, because that's what's disturbing to me about it is, it's like William just said, you're in a genre and you're in a community and you create an album where the answer to your issues is there and you're right there. But then you're so seduced by the culture that you let yourself basically be mind fucked. And I guess that's why it bothers me so much. And yeah, William, I see that split in the genre now. I mean, it's very hard to not just like at this day and age, just be like, I'm going to listen to Newfound Glory and Bayside, because they're going in that direction of more the romanticism and the artistry of it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, I'll continue to listen to the three albums I listen to over and over again and not worry about any of this newfangled music.
So get Aretha Franklin?
I meant pop punk albums.
Who are the three?
Albums.
Old Paramore?
I listen to Paramore and The Audition and what's the third one? I don't remember, but I'll get back to you.
Well, Paramore, which Paramore albums is it? Brand New Eyes?
It's the first two, so it's Riot and Brand New Eyes.
Actually, that's the second and third. They had an album
called it.
Oh, right. Yeah, I downloaded that one and then immediately deleted it.
Yeah, which is interesting because I don't know if anyone else saw on Twitter. There was just somebody who did a list of the best 100 best pop punk albums ever, and they didn't have Brand New Eyes by Paramore on there. I don't know how they didn't have that either. But actually, it's interesting you say that Paramore thing, and it fits exactly with what William was saying, where if you look at Paramore's most recent pop album, I've talked about this before, it's just sadness. It's just sharing the experience of being depressed and sad. And it's just pure emotionalism. And not a surprise, Hayley Williams then got divorced from Chad from Newfound Glory, Chad Gilbert. So I think it's right there. I think that's a literal split. Isn't that the split you're talking about, William?
Yeah. Literally. Yeah, it's the literal split.
Literally. It's literally a split.
Literally.
They split literally. Literally, they literally split.
Jesus, Daniel.
Let's literally split on this episode.
Yeah. Daniel's pissed me off enough. What did we learn this episode? What did we learn this trip?
I learned that not just this trip, but every trip, that it's insanely easy to piss Justin off. So.
just talk shit about Tom Brady. Somebody, this student assistant at work really pissed me off because he... first of all, he's an Eagles fan, and I was nice about the Super Bowl and everything, and even the game on the preseason game this week where I was like, yeah, I can't believe Patriots fans are saying, I don't know if you've seen this, Daniel, but Patriots fans have been like, man, I wish that was the Super Bowl. And I'm like, it was a preseason game. Yeah, but if we had just played like that in the Super Bowl, I'm like, are you serious right now? Like, do you not understand what's going on?
To if the we point had put Brian Hoyer in the second half?
Yeah.
Is that what you'd exactly. wished in the Super yeah. Bowl?
Exactly. So it was to the point that somebody, one of my Patriots fans friends, texted me and he was like, man, you're emotionally a 67-year-old. And then I just replied, Belichick is 66 with the shrug emoji. Well, that sums it up. But yeah, so I'm nice to this kid at work saying all this stuff. And then he's like, you know, the only reason the Patriots are as good as they are is they're in the AFC East. And I'm like, are you serious? And I start trying to argue with him about it and prove my point. And then I go, why do you need to undermine them? He goes, I'm not undermining them. I just said they wouldn't be as good as they were if they were in any other division. I was like, do you need me to look up the word undermining? So that's how to piss me off.
William, what did you learn this week?
I learned that Aquaman is going to be the only movie we're seeing in December, and just barely so.
Just barely so, unfortunately. Justin, what'd you learn?
I learned that Daniel hates all movies that are coming out and not to watch random Netflix movies, even if they have a good actress in them.
Amen.
Yeah, that's pretty much good advice for all.
Unless you want to see lots of penis.
That's true. That's true.
The other artist, by the way, is Loxley, but they started pop punk and they moved more pop. I think they're pretty well pop now. So, British band. All right, so yeah, that's good advice, Justin. Just don't watch Netflix. Let's just all cancel our subscription. Let's just forget it. Let's throw in the towel on the whole Netflix thing. It was a nice experiment. We had some good times, but we had more bad times. And let's just move on to other things like Hulu. Hulu Plus. This episode is not brought to you by Hulu Plus. Hope you learned something this week other than all that nonsense. And if you did, tell us on social media at The Midside everywhere. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat, Vero. You still on Vero, Justin? Still doing anything?
Yeah. No.
I'm still on Vero too.
I'm on it, but I stopped paying attention to Vero because I don't know if this is surprising or not to people out there. I just got sick of Zack Snyder fans. Like,
what?
It's literally to the point that these people are like grossly obsessed and grossly delusional. And it's just like There's this new terminology out there called stan, and like if you support something, you're standing for it and everything. And I'm like, when it gets to this point, I'm out. I just don't care anymore. Look, I want to see the Fountainhead. I want to see the movies he makes, but I don't want to be involved in this crap anymore.
Not a big community guy, you, Justin.
No, it's like Bill Burr says, fuck your group. That's how I feel.
Like, the second they made
a group, fuck that. I'm out.
That being said, join the Midside on Discord, and you can be part of our group.
Maybe become a Midsider. If the chat gets big enough, you can all see me get pissed and leave my own group.
That would be really hilarious. Let's make that happen. So if you're a fan of the show, you can join us on Discord. I don't really know how you do that. Maybe William can explain in a moment. And you can chime in on the news stories. You can, if you're a Patreon subscriber, you can submit trailers for Trailer Takedown. There's even a Patreon exclusive chat channel where you have direct access to us, the hosts, because we are otherwise totally inaccessible, except on all social media. So how do you officially join, William?
Well, we'll link a link into the show notes for the episode, a Discord link. It's also on the Facebook page. And yeah, you just click the link. It opens up Discord on your phone or in a web browser, or you can use the app. And it's basically a big chat room with multiple chat rooms. You can see us chatting it up with other Midsiders. We have, if you're a Patreon subscriber, you get to join the secret Patreon-only channel, where we make fun of each other and post even more secret news stories as we're trying to decide what goes on the show. So yeah, join
actually,
in. It's a lot of fun.
In that secret Patreon channel, you get to submit trailers for us to talk about. And also Midsider Megan submitted the Satanic Temple Satanic statue, the Tom Brady statue story this week. So you get input on the show as well.
Yeah,
absolutely. It's a good time over there. And I occasionally, chime in because I'm actually part of it now. It took long.
So Daniel, it's not really a community. It's more me just leveraging other people to do my production work.
Oh, well, yeah. There you go. You're never going to get sick of that.
It's show prep.
Correct.
That's right. So you can also go to themidside.com/podcast and listen to all the past episodes going way, way back. You can also catch up there on the Snyder series and Nolan Notes and all the special edition shows we did, including Belichick Your Premises, which may be coming back here. We'll see. Talk to Justin about it. See if there's enough demand for Belichick Your Premises. Got a little shout out for Motive Power on Twitter that warmed the cockles of me heart.
Who is Motive Power? Who are you?
Show yourself. And you can also go to themidside.com/store and pick up any number of shirts that we have there, including the classic logo tee, False Dichotomy Bro, and also Hail Snydra. If you don't want to do that, you can go to iTunes or Google Play and subscribe and make sure that you get the episodes delivered to you the moment they're published every Midside Monday. While you're there, leave us a 5-star review. 5 stars help us move up the ranks and help us beat out like Welcome to Night Vale and other Welcome To shows that just aren't as good as our Welcome To show. You can also tell a friend about the show. That helps significantly, helps us expand our reach if you tell your friends about why you like listening to this podcast or why you don't like listening to it, but why they should listen to it. That's fine too. Thanks to Liberty.me for syndicating us. What libertarians? And then patreon.com/midsidepatreon is a, dare I say it, community for content creators, among which the Midside is a participant. What you do is you sign up and you say, I'm willing to help these guys financially by giving $2 an episode. Every time they produce a piece of content, I'll give them $2, and that helps us keep the lights on. I have lots of lights in my new house. I found the joy of having to replace all these friggin' light bulbs in my house. It's a good time, but I need money to help keep those on. And also it helps us with hosting and giveaways and things to help spread the word about the show, equipment, etc. So we sincerely appreciate our Patreon subscribers. You can give as little as you want, as much as you want, and that really helps. We sincerely appreciate
it. In regards to Patreon, when you're searching for it, you can only find it right now through the link on our website or by going to themidside.com/Patreon or patreon.com/themidside. I had Midsider Adam reach out to me, and then other Midsiders confirmed it, that you can't search for us right now. If you go and you put in the Midside or Welcome to the Midside on Patreon, it does not show up. Maybe it's because They have us listed as an adult podcast, which I don't know if I did that when I first signed up because we swear a lot. But I unchecked that and I submitted a ticket to them to get them to change that, and maybe we'll show up on the search. Or maybe not. Maybe we've been shadow banned.
Shadow banned.
Oh, shadow banned. It's possible.
As we've
but if
made
you
it.
Want to support us, themidside.com/Patreon or thepatreon.com/themidside.
Us and Alex Jones, we've made it, man. Yeah. I like being in any Venn diagram where we're on the same side as Alex Jones. It always makes me feel good. So thanks everyone for listening. Tell a friend. Tell a friend because you can't search for it on Patreon. Tell a friend because the world deserves more rational discussion. Tell a friend because, damn it, we have egos to sustain. So thanks so much. Until next time, much love.
This concludes your journey into the Midside. I'm Justin Emelinski reminding you that if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Have a day.
Welcome to the Midside, where we were... Why is somebody laughing? And you're watching Instagram! I can hear the Instagram!
Ooh.
You!
No, I'm watching The Office on Netflix.
Keep it down. I don't need to hear Dwight.